And you're very welcome to another edition of the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. Hopefully you're well, wherever you might be, all over the world now, Lisa. We do have listeners, so it could be morning, afternoon, or even nighttime, whatever you're doing. Hopefully you're well, and hopefully you have been meeting your goals in 2025 to date. Have you, Lisa O'Reilly? It's good to see you again. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Porrick. All good. So we've had a busy time. Two HMOs are currently being refurbed at the moment. They are going a bit slower than I had hoped, I had expected. So I suppose the builder's holidays don't help. But we hope to have it finished by mid-September. I'd like to get the two of them finished in time for the doctor's rotations. So this is where maybe doctors come in, rent a property for a year whilst they're doing their kind of training period. So so looking to get in time for that.
you've been busy then, in that case.
Yeah, and you too, Porrick. I see all the social media posts as well. So what are you at the moment?
Yeah, well, the latest HMO was rented service accommodation, so with some contractors in that at the minute. It's like everything. We've our second unit up and running on the SA as well, so we had the students on to the summertime, so a lot of work getting it organized and getting the team organized. So the third project is currently underway. As you've seen probably on the socials, there was a big hole in what was the living room. We had to dig down. And this is the beauty about old buildings. You kind of go in and you do believe there's not as much to do when you start. There is. So we had to rip it completely back to brick, Lisa. So it was great crack. We had a mini digger in the lounge. So if anyone has ever experienced a mini digger, and it's not a nightclub you're in, it's a house in Derry City. But going really well. So it's getting back together. The boys are going through it. Hopefully, as you were saying, the end of September. And I was thinking, yeah, that's when we'll have this one particularly done again. So two apartments now is the next stage, hopefully just to get them over the line. We've still agreed on another opportunity as well, not in Derry City, outside of that, you know. So yeah, all going according to plan. I think, you know yourself, Lisa, you've let that many different balls juggling. You're like a juggler sometimes, you know. But no, all good. Getting them rented out now is the next stage. And funnily enough, the Derry City, in their wisdom, planning in the south, you don't need planning for HMOs, house of multiple occupancy. In the north and the UK, you do. So restrictions have come in place, which is fine. No investor is any different, you know, or developer is any disillusioned around that. Because obviously, if there's an overrun of HMOs in specific areas, it isn't really good for the locals, and I would agree with that, you know. So they've changed the parameters of everything. So in particular areas, you're only allowed 10%. In other areas, you're only allowed 30%. But the one aspect of it as well, which they've changed or trying to change, which is very, it's going to make it very difficult in a way for HMOs to actually work, is that you're only allowed to have a 4-bed HMO. That's the maximum. So you can't have a 6-bed, you can have a 10-bed, you know. So a lot of bigger properties would lend themselves, the square footage would lend themselves to a nice HMO. And I think, Lisa, I know we'd be raving on about HMOs, but it's just the way they're communicated to the market. Everything we do is high end, you know. I have an interior designer in the last one, you know, and I think it was Gareth Pierce said to me and you the last time we recorded it with Gareth was, did you have an interior designer in your particular property? And our answer was no. So there's a bad rhetoric around HMOs, houses of multiple occupancy. And yes, there is the dodgy landlords, don't get me wrong. We're not one, but you know, it's having an effect on the market because the market has grown. The university is trying to get bigger. As you indicated, there's doctors and nurses, and there's, you know, there's professionals coming to the area that don't necessarily want to rent a house. So there's a lot of different elements. But anyway, that's my rabbit finish. Finished
that's
up.
Your rabbit finished. So come here, what's going to happen then, Porrick, just to the ones, the existing ones that are over the 4 beds? Will they get some sort of grandfather agreement where they get to continue to operate as they are?
Well, you have a license, so you know you have that, and you can apply back. So it's only coming into effect this year. And look, as I say, how does it stack up all will be revealed, as they say, you know. But again, it's causing an issue for university, which the main driver of a lot of it, you know. But we have a fantastic guest today, Lisa, as well, haven't we?
We certainly do, yeah. So obviously you're the radio host, Porrick, so I'll let you introduce him because I'm not a very good host. So I'll let you introduce him there, yeah?
Well, yeah, well, we've gone the whole way to Dublin to find an individual where we haven't come across so much yet, Lisa. He's a specialist in the property world. Nobody can introduce themselves better than themselves. So Andrew Radigan, the Irish Property Advisor, you're very welcome to the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. How are you? And tell us exactly what you do, Andrew.
When I heard fantastic individual, like, you'll see me on the video, I was looking around the room for the I don't know if I'm that fantastic. Maybe we can get during the summer. So thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So my name is Andrew Radigan. I have a company called Radigan Real Estate. And essentially what we've tried to do is create, I suppose, a business that advocates for buyers in Ireland who seek to buy in Ireland. And the idea is that we provide that singular independent buying service where we take what people think they want in their property journey, whether that's personal, professional, investment, or that transition piece, and we challenge it, and then we advocate for what it is they actually want in their property journey. And because we're independent, we don't owe anyone anything else. We book the trend in terms of how we charge, how we work with people, and the idea is that we stick with people until we get that end result. So it's been fun, mostly.
It's definitely has been fun. And I suppose, Lisa, interestingly to say that he's booked the trend in what he's actually trying, Andrew's trying to do. Andrew, and has that been a challenge? Suppose, you know, doing a little bit of research on you. You know, you were originally doing lettings, you were doing a little bit of everything. When did the penny drop that you have to really niche down to scale up? I think that's the terminology if you go back to business school.
Yeah, the old school niches get riches. to be perfectly frank with you, I think if I go back to the beginning of, I thoroughly enjoyed, I used to work with a very prominent agent in Dublin named Janet Carroll, and she was ex-Savills, so she'd worked there for a long time. And I think COVID was a big turning point for a lot of people where they basically reflected on their lives and they either paused and did up the garden, or maybe they rethought where they wanted to do things. And I did both. So I was at home with my 4-year-old, who's now 4 or 5 nearly, due to be born, my second daughter. And I just thought, is there something I want to do? And I'd always done my own thing prior to working with someone else in property. And basically, when I niched down this business, I actually niched down because I didn't like how I felt doing anything else. Because when I was a generalist, I felt like I was another agent. So, you know, you meet someone, they make an assumption about you. They might send, my original thing was, if Porrick and Lisa were at a dinner party 5 years ago and someone said, how would you recommend Andrew? Oh, Andrew does everything. He's a little bit of this. If you want an apartment valued, he'll do it. If you want something letter sold, he's your man. And for me, that didn't sit right. So the more I began to notice a trend for people who needed guidance, because although property seems like such a simple transaction, people have their own ideas of how it's going to work. So one person is bullish, aggressive, another person sends their father in to do their bidding for them, another person is a terrible communicator and wonders why they don't get the property. So by looking at all these different trends, I said, well, what do I enjoy doing? I really enjoy working with people. I really enjoy challenging what it is people want, but not from an egotistical place. It's more a case of, just because you have money to buy something doesn't mean I'm going to sell it to you for this particular reason. And as I began to refine that down, I realized that when you're now at a dinner party, I'm basically like a surgeon or an assassin, which is, you have someone who says what they want. It's like, well, I know a guy who can source property for you in a particular niche, and it's going to cost you. And that for me was what I wanted, because I didn't want to be, and it's nothing about being associated with agents. It was more, I wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to understand how I can help them, and also what I'm not, which is, I'm not the everyman. And that was something that took time to really to hold on to and stick with.
I'm going to take you back to a very, point, a good point that you put in there, that during the COVID that you sat back and you reflected on, you know, what do you enjoy doing? And you mentioned about those factors, like everyone else was putting a pub out the back of the house, like Lisa and that, you know. So, you know, I think you've done really well there to actually keep it together to get out the other side. But the thing about it is that, And trying to change that, I suppose, is one part of it, but financially then trying to change it is another.
Completely. And I suppose one thing that people overlook, they tend to think that every decision they make is linear. But I always say, no matter what you choose to do, you're still making a decision. So never more so, like when I think of now, so my late father was a property developer. And I remember sitting and at my Holy Communion, I would have had more plasterers and plumbers at our party than anybody else, because that is what my dad's life revolved around. And it was only as I got older, I realized that my dad didn't have a perfect way of making money. He always just tried to figure it out. And I think when we look at life now, people don't have jobs for lives pretty much anymore, because roles are changing. Technology is playing a big role in how people are trying to cut their bottom line. People view jobs as being the safest thing in the world. So when I look at the risk in inverted commas I took, I could have spent a decade building someone else's life or someone else's dream on the assumption that it was going to be promised to me. And that was my own first mistake. Not that that was what the agent was thinking of doing, but I think we often think that risk or lack of risk revolves around, let's say, if I go work for you, Porrick, and I just sit there for a decade, I take my holidays, I smile politely, and I work on the assumption that you owe me anything more than that, and you don't. So the risk element for me was, well, why don't I try and do something I thoroughly enjoy? I'm not going to try and escape it. I don't need 2 weeks off to try and get my head straight so I can deal with office politics. I can't stand wearing suits and ties, and I don't do the yes man. So I thought, well, what are the things I hate? Let's test it and see who vibes with it. And if I meet someone and I'm in a shirt, a pair of trousers and a pair of runners, and they don't get me because of that, I was never for them in the first place. So for me, the risk element was stick with something long enough, be open to learning, being open to be proven wrong, and being open to being proactive. So what I learned was people is key to what I do. So I have quotas for coffees, whether I'm having a busy month or a quiet month, I have 25 coffees that I want to get in the diary. That's new coffees, old coffees, connections, introductions. And for me, instead of asking what I can get from people, I just give. And then now 5 years later, I just have people that come to me and say, I've heard you're the guy who does X. So for me, it was having the patience to see that through.
I love that. 25 coffees in per month, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just break that down, because this is very, very simple. People get very overcomplicated when it comes to developing a business, but sometimes it is, Lisa, by just having that coffee, sitting down, having the conversation. So you're looking at 25 coffees per month.
Mm-hmm. And that's very good.
The best way to describe it is, so that's a mixture. So I will have, we have a couple of people who work with us. And what happens is the accountability side of it might be that if you imagine when it comes to creating connections, people have this idea that I can't reach out to someone because they've obviously been jaded by someone pitching them in their LinkedIn DMs or saying, hi, how's it going, Lisa? By the way, my name's Andrew and I've got a platform that's going to totally revolutionize your property journey. I'm like, what is that? How about you meet Lisa, that you meet Porrick and you say, hi, I'm Andrew. I'm really interested in what you do. And what I do from a selfish point of view is I'm not, when I meet you, and this is the great thing, and the best example, I'll actually give you an example of, I educated people on how I want to meet people, because originally when you want to network, you say, listen, if you know anyone that's interesting to connect to, let me know. That literally means that you're taking a piece of paper with what you want, rolling it up and throwing it over your shoulder. So what I say to people now is, anyone you meet that has a great mindset, that's dynamic, that's got an interesting point of view, I don't care whether they want to buy or sell a house. I want to meet them and I'd love to understand their journey so far. And I had a guy who over the last couple of years I built a great relationship with, and he introduced me to a guy. And the guy actually said to him originally, I've just bought a house. Why am I meeting an estate agent? And the guy sent me the screenshot underneath. He said, this has nothing to do with property. And the reason I loved that was, I met the guy, fascinating individual. He's got a great mindset. But by connecting through conversation, I sourced something by connecting with the jeweler of something he's been trying to find for about 3 years. It had nothing to do with me in business, but it had everything to do with connection. And what I loved about that was I understood his perspective. He had a great outlook. I've built an interesting connection that I can meet for coffees and drive value for. And also by virtue of that unknown, I was able to give him the name of someone who helped him in a personal capacity. That to me is how you build networks and connections, rather than, hi, I'm Andrew, what can I get from you? And the more I've leaned into that, the better it's gotten.
I think I agree with that, Andrew, because a couple of things that you just said there in the last kind of couple of minutes was COVID. COVID for me was the complete game changer for me. I was that corporate person climbing the corporate ladder, but not really getting where I wanted to get with it. Had to complete mindset change and decided to pull the plug and to go into property. Best decision I've ever made. But don't get me wrong, the emotions that come with running your own business, like, it's high highs and low lows. It's very, very rarely is it like this, like kind of the way it would be in terms of if you were working in a job, you know, very steady eddy. There's no more steady eddy with me anymore. It's very highs and lows. So, but I'm enjoying every part of the journey. But what you just said there about meeting people and getting to know them, how I've managed to grow this business is by doing that very thing. And people would often say to me, who are you meeting this time? What did you get out of it? Like, even my own husband would say, who are you meeting this time? Did you get anything out of it? And I'd be like, no, I didn't. But actually, when you keep those conversations going and keep that phone call up, you make an impact on them. They're going to remember you and vice versa. And, you know, then the text messages will start or the WhatsApps will start. So, yeah, I completely agree with that, Andrew. I don't think you need to meet somebody going in with that mindset of what can I do for you? What can you do for me? It's just going for a coffee. And if you click, you click and people will just remember you. And then people naturally try and help if they can, I think.
Completely. And I think COVID has opened it up to have really organic conversations, because I meet people who are very successful. And when you sit down with them, I suppose I don't ask the generic questions and I give people a space to have a really interesting chat. And I always preface every chat with, this goes nowhere. So by virtue of what I do, I don't drink, so it's just down the pub. I'm not going to tell you who I met or what they've told me. But I've chatted with very successful people who make great money, they do whatever. But if you ask them what they really want to do, they might want to be a baker, they might want to go do something else. But by virtue of the life they've created, they feel there's no way out. And sometimes when you build connections with people and networks, you're giving people a perspective where, I remember I connected one person and had a great conversation with him. And then literally 6 months later, I noticed that his email changed and his email changed to the person I connected him with. So the two of them met, understood what they wanted to do, and then combined their businesses and set up their own business. And that had zip to do with me taking a fee, me getting involved and trying to get some sort of an acquisition cost. But through organic conversation, you understood what he wanted from life. And I mentally went through my Rolodex and said, there's an interesting guy here you need to meet. And that was it. And that, I think, in everything we do is the most overlooked, because you can put deals together to beat the band. You can go in and be transactional. But I think when you do your own thing, one of the benefits is I could stop what I'm doing right now and sell toffees. I could just figure it out and go and sell Rattigan Real Estate's delicious toffees. And I think what you have to be is versatile, flexible, and open to trying new things. And networking is one of those delayed gratification elements that for me is an absolute key to what I do. Because I love learning from people. I don't know everything. And even I tell my kids now, and they're at the age where they think I'm perfect. They're 9 and 4. Every day I tell them that I make mistakes because I'm always learning. And for me, that's key to how you go to business.
Is that something, suppose, Andrew, just, I know you lost your dad at a very young age, and has that given you that kind of, look, what can really go wrong here that can give you that spring to really, you know, go after what you really want in life? And just by listening to the way you're talking, you get in behind the person first of all, and then you really try and understand and do the natural. It's an Irish thing, is how can I help you? And you're not going about it in that particular way. That has been in our our DNA for years, is that particular aspect. Do you feel but that time, you know, really you have a different outlook on life now, or has that materialized over since your journey since COVID, really?
I do you know what's funny? When I think of it now, I used to curse in ways, my childhood or the way things went. And I suppose when I look back at it now, I was actually building a foundation for the attitude I have, and I wouldn't change it for the world. So we had a period of time where we had a family member who died in tragic circumstances. Shortly after that, my best pal took his own life, and I was involved in that, unfortunately. And then 6 months after that, my dad died. And then a year after that, we had an uncle. So it was like almost like the Grim Reaper. I was, you know, amongst my friends and family. It was like your Starbucks card. I was stamping that one before I get frequent funeral miles. You know, I was at that stage. But I think all of those things I used to wish away. And then as I got older, I realized that the resilience I had, my attitude to appreciation, my gratitude for the smallest thing was actually the stuff that everyone around me took for granted, because they'd never had it. Now, everyone, we always say that, you know, if we all put our crap on the floor in the hopes of picking up something else that wasn't as much trouble, we'd all take our own crap back once we see what everyone else has dealt with. So I think the reframe for me was kind of saying, all of these things happen for a reason. I never would have met my now wife if all of these things hadn't have happened. She's taught me so much. But when I meet anybody or I get to be involved in anything, or if I have a simple coffee with someone, I have that great opportunity to reflect on and say, I know what the not nice stuff is about, so I don't just blindly go about my day. So when I reframe a challenge, I look at it and I think, instead of kind of thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do with this? I look at it again, I get to figure this out. Like, what is the worst thing that can happen? And when I started my business, I had a business mentor that I was paying before I could pay myself. And the first meeting we had was, he said, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I said, well, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. He said, no. What's the worst thing that can happen? He's like, okay, well, this happens. And then that happens. And basically, long story short, through 7 or 8 stages, I bought a lawnmower and I'd be cutting grass to make ends meet. So we looked at the worst case and I was like, I'm okay with that. So when I did that, I was like, that's fine, because there are very happy people who make great money doing boring businesses. So that was kind of my default. Well, that's okay then. It's not desolate on the street with nothing. So when I did that, I reframed everything. So I suppose the long answer to it is, everything in my life has given me the skill set and the tools to be able to deal with people. And I suppose a big part of what I love about it is I've met people who've made lots of money and then they come to me thinking they should do something. So let's say I had someone who sold a property or sold a business. They wanted to buy a property. And by sitting down having a coffee, I realized that everyone around them had essentially told them they should do this because they made this amount of money. And they said to me, I'm told I should buy this big salubrious house on an illustrious road. But everything he said was about how much he loved his house, his kids, his grandkids, the certain room that he loved, how the light sat in it, whatever. And at the end of the conversation, I said, take out 500 grand, buy a watch, buy a car, go on holiday and see how you feel in a year. And he kind of looked at me as in, but you're not pitching me a listing of XYZ or a portfolio. I was like, no, what you need is to sit with it as opposed to do what everyone else tells you you need to do. And in that instant, I think that was for me where I said what I wanted to say. Whereas if I was in a boardroom, I would have kept my mouth shut. I would have picked up 6 or 7 listings and said, this one's got a big annex, you should go for this one, as opposed to doing what felt right. And I think my life's experience has kind of led me to that point as well, which I love.
And that whole, like, what's the worst that could go wrong? So again, all these things that you're saying, Andrew, I can relate to them all, because when I made the decision to go from the corporate world to the property world, it was like, what, I had that very same conversation, what could go wrong? And most of my close family and friends were saying all the things that could go wrong. They had a list of them, all that could go wrong. But in my mind, I was like, do you know what? We can cut down on the mortgage repayments. We can cut down on all the subscriptions. We can do all that. Like, you literally can, if you really want to, you can actually cut down your costs down to a minimum and do what you really want to do. Now, I don't think everybody, though, should go into it with a, you know, feck it. Like, let's have no responsibility. Let's just do what our passion is. You know, I think you do have to have some sort of kind of like considered kind of risk kind of in relation to, you know, what you want to get into. But I do think that if people took more time, as like the biggest risk that someone takes is by doing the same thing day in, day out, giving out about their life, not happy. Like, that is a massive risk. We've only the biggest or the smallest resource we've got here is our time on this earth. So why would you completely just do the same thing day out, day in, and expect different results, you know? So I think that's a big risk by just staying the way you are, you know, if you're not enjoying it.
Huge. Sorry, Park, go for it.
No, you go ahead, Andrew.
So the it's very interesting that you say that, Lisa, because I am, I suppose, one of the great lessons I learned. I had a startup years ago where it was something for the car business. And obviously when I started that, I was working in the car business for free to understand how the customer worked and how the business worked. But I used to read and listen to Gary Vaynerchuk, who's now a well-known marketeer, yes, who owns a great successful business, whatever else. But he used to say back in the day, and he harps on about it now, and it's still so true, is everyone's version of winning is different. So when you go back to that key observation that all your well-meaning family and friends have is, like Gary Vaynerchuk knows people who make 50 grand a year, they take 2 holidays and they play video games with the lads every weekend, and they are absolutely delighted and happy with their lives. And I think what we overlook in every circumstance is we say to each other, how can I be Elon Musk? How can I be Warren Buffett? If I do a cold plunge at 4 in the morning and I journal for 11 hours upside down, I'm bound to be a success. Everyone's version of success is different. So I look at it and I say, like you said, I know people who are in full-time jobs and they just toe the line and they do what they do and they thoroughly enjoy their lives because that's what they want. Like, let's say their version of life is simplicity. So when they finish at five, they get to leave, they do whatever. I think where we need to look at the other side of the risk element is, you, if you look at both sides of everything, everything is always both sides. And this is one of the best lessons I learned from my he's still my business mentor, my business coach, is that if you look at everything, there is always a bad and always a good. But if you look at both, you neutralize it and you see it from a place of objectivity. So someone dying is sad. It is terrible. But on the other side, you get to connect with family members. You appreciate the good times. You recall good memories. And then let's say you might pull on experiences that you may have taken for granted otherwise. Winning the lotto is a great thing, but you may have family members that cling on to you. You have people that start taking your money and you may live a life that you didn't expect you wanted to live. So I think if we really sat down in a room on our own and said, what does my version of winning look like? I think that's where time folds into it, because I suppose my mother has passed away as well. She passed away about 6 years ago now, and she was unfortunately an alcoholic. But when I look at it now, my father was 52. My mother was 60. I want to surpass their lifespan by that and then some. You know, I really want to live a phenomenal life. But I also don't want to sit at some stage and say, well, I'm going to do what I really want to do over that hill at some promised or perceived promised time in the future, which doesn't exist because we don't know what's going to happen. And I think if you really become self-aware and say, what is it I want from life? So if you want a job that keeps you tipping away and you enjoy Christmas holidays and do whatever else, great. But equally, I know people that have loads of money and they don't know what happiness is because they just want more. They can't sit still because they don't like themselves. So that for me, it's not always a money thing. I think a lot of it is looking at what you want from life. And then if you decide you don't want it, the risk is also steering the course. You can get fired to the age of 58 and not get hired again. Or you can go broke 15 times over and then the 16th time you hit the jackpot. But life is this constant thread of a mixture of everything. But I think that self-awareness is a key piece for people.
And you know, the way you mentioned there twice about a mentor, how important do you think it is for somebody to have a mentor, a paid or unpaid? I suppose personally, I definitely think it's a value, and I'm always seeking out a good mentor. But what do you think in relation to that? And do you think it's only business people should have mentors, like people who are entrepreneurs and in business, or do you think that people employed as well should have a mentor?
Everybody, because people have this idea, and I think when you shift your mindset from what's something going to cost me to what's the investment. An investment could be you're putting a water filter in downstairs in your kitchen. That's an investment in better tasting water, good quality cooking, and your family's future. It's not what's this going to cost me. And people have this idea that if you pay someone, that's money you're then going to lose. But you're paying someone to outsource a thought process, to challenge you on ideas, and not let you get away with lying to yourself. So if I say I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow, that's a promise I keep to myself. So it's very easy for me to talk myself out of it. Oh, you've had a tough day, Andrew. The kids didn't sleep. Stay in bed an extra bit longer. Don't you worry about it. Whereas if I have to go meet Porrick, Porrick is at the gym at 7 o'clock with the double espresso waiting to have a go at me if I don't show up. So I think when you look at how people think of outsourcing in a way of, let's say, with the likes of a coach or a mentor, it's vital to everything you do. If you want to be a good author, find someone who's an author, find someone who's doing it, sit down, be humble, be open to be proven wrong, and then get them to give you their thought process. Like even now, I could have an idea, like my business mentor, coach, whatever you want to call it, basically has gotten me to refine what I do by virtue of everything I would have said on our calls. So there would have been months of me being on a call going, I've opened another door and this guy was really interesting and I knew he wasn't paying attention. He's like, he was noticing all the things. And then he fed back to me in a loop by saying, Andrew, everything you've done for the last number of months, you don't like, but you lit up when you were talking about giving this person advice. Let's dig into that. Whereas if I'd done it myself, I might have just trundled through and spent 5 years putting a sign up. So I think no matter what you're doing in your life, it doesn't matter what it is, having someone to look over it or give their opinion on it is very important. But I also think you have to pay for something to appreciate it. And I suppose that's how I've also built my business. You know, if someone says, would you go have a look at something there for me? I'd be like, no, that's not how this works. If you want me to advise you on something, you pay me, I do it, and then I have your sole attention. And I think when you get someone who's a mentor, an advisor, or a coach, you pay them because you're going to learn from them by virtue of paying them, rather than getting something for free, because what's free is overlooked.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. When you come to anything in life, regardless of what it is, whatever it might be, for you to get from one point to the next point, you have to invest into someone else who's further down the line. Now, you could grab coffees and teas with different individuals, but unless you have someone who's going to hold you accountable on a monthly basis, you're wasting your time, because you're not going to get the growth you want. And you're not going to really, really analyze where you're at and call, as you say, call you out. And, you know, it doesn't, I'm so passionate about mentors and, you know, getting into that for anyone who's looking to develop themselves, because I've had a shitload of them, you know, and continue to have mentors and individuals. And I'd say you're the same, Lisa. You're like me. You're always, we're always educating ourselves in the property space, if it's, you know, within Ireland or even England. It's, you know, the parameters are pretty much the same, but it's about really getting people that challenges you in that particular way. And it's refreshing you say that, Andrew. Would you agree, Lisa?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, I am always looking for kind of guidance, not guidance, but just a mentorship. But you mentioned, Andrew, a couple of things you're saying there, and I'm just like, that's me. And one of the things you said was running. So I'm running at the speed of light, and sometimes I still don't know where I'm going. I just like the whole, you know, the success I get from this. Like I would try, maybe, you know, when I first started this maybe 4 years ago, I would try 100 things, and it was like throwing shit at a wall and seeing which one would stick. Like I tried a bit of you know, giving property training. I tried everything, basically. I tried to set up a network, and I suppose, but by me doing that and nobody telling me not to do it, I actually got firsthand experience as to what I like and what I don't like. But I did waste, I suppose I didn't waste, I did waste, I used up a lot of time doing these things. And now I decided to niche down. So I do go to the UK to get the kind of the property mentorship. But I do think it's very important for me now to move to that next step and get somebody to help me with, you know, or where do I actually want to go with this? Because I love running and I love kind of creating a bit this chaos, you know, and seeing which one's going to take off. But at the same time, sometimes my head is just, you know, I'm not always present when I'm at home with the kids, because my mind is just racing like 10 to the dozen, you know. So yeah, I do think a mentor would help for me with that. And I'm definitely not the finished article by any sense of the word.
You never will be, though. I think that the fallacy we all have is that there's some sort of perfect finish line where someone gives you a little red rose and says, now Lisa, you're the perfect human being. I think one of the things I love is no one has a clue what they're doing half the time. People just get rewarded in certain areas by being very good at what they do. And I think we skew that by virtue of it being, let's say, Elon Musk, loads of money, so therefore he must have the meaning of life. I'm sure there's elements of his personal life that are falling to shreds, but that's his version of his personality. So when you look at what you do, Lisa, like you said, what you may thrive on is that you're constantly doing something. Whereas if I gave you a well-established building in Balls Bridge and put your name on it, LOR Investments, and you're sitting in the biggest suite in the whole thing, overlooking what an analyst says, that might be your idea of hell. So I suppose when you get a coach, a lot of the time it's kind of like, you know, the bars on a bowling alley. All it does is bounce you back out again. And there's things where my coach will say something, kind of like a parent, and I'll go and do what I want to do anyway. And then I learn the hard way. But then I have to go back cap in hand and go, do you remember you told me not to do that? I did it. And he's like, okay, let's talk through it. So that's also the benefit, that they're not going to give you all the answers, but they give you the space to be able to say, you told me not to, or you gave me this thought process or this idea, and it kind of sat with me for the last week, and I'd like to take this approach. So like you said, you may thrive on the action, but maybe it's a case of adding meat on the bones of what Lisa might be like in 5 years' time. And it's never perfect, but it's just being open to that ulterior or alternative approach.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a workshop here. We're doing this particular podcast. So if you've got a pen,
the meaning of life.
Andrew's opening up the diary for anyone to get it. to get a psychology lesson as well. But come here, Andrew, let's get back into the property side of things. That was brilliant. Just thought that allow that to go wherever it could go, because it's so important. We're all people at the end of the day and we love connecting. But getting back on to what you're doing now, as I say, Irish Property Advisor, the different aspects that you touched in as well. But looking at your marketing and your new LinkedIn, your love about LinkedIn, reading some of your posts, it's becoming another aspect that you're really digging into, and even looking at your YouTube and everything else and your website, everything. So that's been a journey, the marketing aspect. Could you talk to us about that? Because when you're niching down, you're targeting a very specific audience and you're trying to do that in different elements as well. So tell me a little bit about that.
So I think when I think of my original property website, I originally spent, it must have been 10 grand on a website that was covering sales, lettings. I had an interactive map of Dublin and Wicklow. And when you click on the county, I was going to recommend, you know, right down to a restaurant or a school in each county. It was a painstaking experience that I thought people were going to love. And it was going to set me apart from, let's say, inverted commas, generic agency. And the more I realized what I was doing, I was trying to appeal to a broad range of people. So basically, by trying to appeal to everybody, I was appealing to nobody. And the more I leaned into what it is I want to communicate about myself, it's much like having a chat here. I can't insert generic corporate phrase here to cover my ass. I have to be open and genuine. And I don't mean disrespectful. It's more just I have to be authentic. So when I looked at how I like to market, I wanted to be able to put content together that people can pick up or leave where it is, but that I wanted it to relate to people, that there's successful people who still like to have fun. There's authentic people who can't stand BS. There's genuine people who want to do X, Y, Z. And then there's people who I may never meet, but I'd still want to help. So it started off with me putting a buying course together, and I literally did it for free. I think it was 6 or 7 videos where I'm staring straight at the camera and I'm really trying to get people to think about their property journey. And the idea being, I cared enough to do something that if no one watched it, it's out there and it is what it is. But if people watch it and they make one less mistake, they may never have met me, but it was that kind of value-driven approach. And I think the more I leaned into that, the more I realized that my content became more relatable and memorable. So when I think of my marketing, I'm not trying to appeal to everyone, which is, you know, 5 steps on how to present your house when you're selling it. Because I think what happens with agency is that we've got so many great characters in property. You've got people that have been in business for 40, 50, 55, 60 years, and they've met everyone. Like, they've met the broad stroke of society and they know how people work. But when it comes to presenting themselves, they think photos and a video is how they're going to really sell something. Whereas people resonate with who you are. So for example, there's a great agent in Waterford, Regina Mangan, who's from Liberty Blue. And they have a bloopers reel. And I met her for coffee last week. And I said, I love your blooper reel because it really shows me that you've got excited agents who love what they do. They can have a bit of fun, but hey, guess what? They also make mistakes and they're human. And the more I leaned into that kind of stuff, the more I realized that it's the funny everyday that people want. So like, I had a post this week that went up about the 2 types of people in a sauna. I think I must have had 7,000 impressions on it. And all it was the one person who sits politely, enjoys the sauna, and the other person that lies too close to you. But I related it to property. So the whole point of it was, we all have those moments where someone is rude at a petrol station. You know, you've got the family member who's intrusive or tells you you've gotten fat, all these things. And all you have to do is correlate it to what you do. And then you're grabbing someone with an everyday example and then pulling in the property piece. And I think for me, I didn't want to talk at people. I wanted it to be kind of that conversation starter, that thinker, that thing that gets them to resonate, which is, when I look at family, let's say if you're selling a property because business has gone really well and you're upsizing, that's a good day at the races. That's a great experience. But if you're selling because someone has died or it's a family or a bank issue, that's a different process. But we're all subject to the human condition. And whatever we're doing in business does have some relation to what we're doing. So when it came to me doing my marketing, I thought, I'm going to find who it is I want to talk to. Every time I write something, I ask myself or ChatGPT, is this for my ideal audience? Because I don't need a first-time buyer that wants to spend 200 grand. I give value for them by virtue of my course and the things that are there, that if they're searching for it. But if I've got someone who's in Singapore that's in the C-suite and they read something about the pitfalls of family members telling you what you should do with your life, they might go, God, someone's actually paying attention. and they did it with a bit of humor. So the more I've doubled down on that, the more I've found my tribe.
Are you getting leads out of it? This is the marketing side of me coming on. Are you getting traction out of it, Andrew?
Yeah, so I suppose the three main ports of call that I use are, I've got my organic, which is my coffees, which is super important. And it's also connections, which is, you know, Porik, you should meet a guy who does a great thing. Lisa, you meet a girl who does X, Y, Z, or vice versa. I don't have to play any role in it. And a big part of that is you're just staying front and center in people's minds. And it's kind of like reciprocity. So if I connect people without anything, any expectations, that's my organic reach. My online presence is LinkedIn. I did away with Instagram and anything else because I thought if I do LinkedIn, I'm dealing with business people. I'm dealing with people who have the wherewithal to understand what I want to do. And I don't care about likes. I care about resonance. So what's really sat with people. So I don't do the vanity metrics. And then thirdly is my newsletter. So I do a bi-weekly newsletter and I cover one very simple topic. It's called Shut the Front Door. So the idea was you get my humor from how I started.
Very good.
I could start it with, I did one that was on divorce. So it was literally a tough subject. And instead of pretending and inserting generic phrase, I was kind of like, it's crap. It's not easy. What about the kids? What about when you don't communicate and all these other things? And I got messages from people saying, thank you for actually saying something about this because people are afraid to talk about it. But my life's experience has taught me to not shy away from it because it's not awkward for me. And when you give people that platform, that's the stuff that resonates.
Lisa loves a good post, so she does, Andrew. You might have seen some of the stuff that she pops out, you know. But Lisa, you've gone viral, am I right in saying that? Yeah.
I went viral. I like LinkedIn as well, Andrew. I think it's a great platform because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to look for landlords, people with money, investors. So that's just ideal platform for me. But yeah, I did a post there lately on LinkedIn, and ChatGPT helped me make it. So, you know, with the new rules that the government brought in or introduced or talked about introducing for next year, they did it a couple of months ago. I said, like, you know, it's the rules that came out. I was very, the rules had just come out or the news had just come out about what the rules were going to be. And I could see some people in the property industry saying, oh, this sounds like it might be okay, these rules. And I looked into them and I was like, these rules are pure shite for an Irish investor. Like, it just doesn't, it makes complete no sense whatsoever. So I went to ChatGPT and I said, ChatGPT, give me a post that's, you know, that's in Alex Hormozi. Have you ever heard of him? Alex Hormozi style. He's basically like an American kind of marketing, but he's very direct. I like the way he communicates. So I went to ChatGPT and I said, give me a post. These are my opinions on the new, you know, rules that are coming out. And I said, give me a suggestion as to like the picture or whatever. So sure enough, it gave me a post. I tweaked it or whatever. I put it up, did a picture of one of the HMOs that I'm doing up at the moment, like with a, you know, pissed off face sort of thing. And I think the thing got 90,000 views. We're up to 90,000 views on it now and like loads of comments. It just went completely bloody viral. But from that, actually, so, you know, like when you put yourself out there like that, I got a bit of backlash, kind of a couple of like tinfoil hat. I call them tinfoil hat people, you know, like these conspiracy theorists. I got a couple of those on the post. I got a couple of people contact me saying, like, you know, what I was saying was wrong. So look, at the end of the day, I do understand the power of LinkedIn, but my problem though, Porik, as you see, is I'm not very consistent. I could go for maybe 2 weeks and post something every second day for 2 weeks, and then the business, then we take on another maybe 5 houses in 2 weeks and the head is just goes down, and the first thing that I leave drop is the social media, and it's the wrong thing to leave drop. I really should like have a process for this where I just like plan it out for the rest of the, you know, the week or whatever, but it's just it's the one thing I drop and I shouldn't do. Yeah,
it's not on, Andrew. We're gonna have to sit down and have a chat with her about this.
It's gonna have to be an intervention here, Porik. Turn the screen off. We're here because we care, Lisa. We're here because everyone's here because we care. Okay?
They all Lisa, care about me.
It's a feast or famine cycle, though. And I think one of the things is, this is equally your language when you say you should. Like, we all should all over ourselves by saying all these things, but you're very busy. So a lot of the time is saying, well, how can I do something the way I like to do it? And maybe it's a case of giving yourself 2 hours when you're in that zone, Alex Hormozi style, have that chat, because he actually, not him, but they have a ChatGPT with him, as in like the chat where it's as if it's all his content. And you could just say, you want to put together, your goal is you want to put together 6 posts in the space of an hour and a half, whatever it may be. Get those 6 posts with interesting content. At least you have them, and then you can always front load them. But I think that's probably, as business owners, you get that feast or famine cycle, because you build it in, you then become super busy, and then you neglect the very thing that got you super busy in the first place. So it's kind of, it's almost like making time for it as if it was, you know, time with the kids or time with your accountant, not always well spent, but you know,
necessary evil. Well, now Lisa is an accountant, so she knows the crack there.
Yeah.
I used to be a car dealer, so I can say whatever I want.
none of that dirty talk, Andrew.
No, absolutely not. I'm, my mother used to have a t-shirt that says I'm not perfect but I'm so close it scares me.
You're getting there. But look, Andrew, I suppose today's conversation has very much gone down different, and that's what we like about Solid Foundations Property Podcast, bringing people on, having a conversation with them about the property world and how things move. But within the investment space, it's a difficult space out there for the Irish property market at the minute. Is there anything you would feel that that could be done, that should be done, from inviting investors back on? It's been very much turf them out, take your bag, off you go. Is that going to be sustainable in the Irish market?
I think I suppose property has always been one of those adversarial things. And I think the difficulty is, if you have government making decisions that are sexy in the short term for when they come knocking on your door, that's one thing. But I know home builders who want to build. I know people that want to drive value. They want legacy. Like you've got somebody who wants to build something that they can drive past in 30 years' time and say that they built it. Whereas now, the system has created it. It's much like the iPass idea. Like people go nuts when people are building or retrofitting these for immigration. It's a system that someone has seen an opportunity to make money from. So when you look at in anything investment wise, like I have people that were living abroad that were looking to take a view to Ireland. And as soon as that proposed change came in, every single one of them said they were going to press pause and put their money into something else, press pause on Ireland and put their money into something else. And there are some people that are looking for value in Ireland, but they're taking the view to maybe the kind of pension concept. They're not going to be spending a huge amount of money, but they're not really, like, when I think of it now, you've got people who are taking, they want to put their money into something that is going to drive a return. And the ironic thing about the way the market has gone is it's this real, if you're a landlord, you're the big bad landlord who's an IRES or a REIT, and they are going to turf you out, and it's all about making money. And then the actual bulk of the conversation gets shut. It shies away from the people who have, say, bought a property, they paid above the odds 15 years ago, they've kept their head above water, or those who are trying to amalgamate a pension while still providing some of the accommodation. You're not incentivizing anyone to actually do what they really want to do, which is invest in their country or invest in Ireland. So you have supply at an all-time low. When you think of the development landscape, like even the talk of apartments and that kind of stuff transitioning, it's not going to happen in the level that people I think it's going to happen. And when you think of the rules now, why would I buy a car now and then pay over the odds for it, and then only after I've bought it do you tell me that I can only drive it on a Tuesday and I can't take it out when it's raining? It doesn't make any sense. So how am I supposed to put money into something that someone retrospectively tells me you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do the other? That's not creating a system of certainty. That's not respecting tenants' life cycle and how they can enjoy a property. And that's not respecting what landlords and investors are doing by putting money into something. And I think the challenge is we're probably 20 years behind other countries in how we view renting, how we view living. And we're only just coming around. Like you'll see, and it is PR, you'll see a lot of purpose-built rentals. They have all these, you know, snapshots of videos where all the residents come together for an event or a dinner or a cinema, whatever, because they're trying to showcase what living in those spaces is like and the enhanced way you can live your life. But I do think there's this stigma in Ireland about how we live in apartments, what rental means. Rental for life doesn't have to mean that you've got like a scrounger who's there paying 200 euro for the last 25 years. There's people who live in New York their entire lives renting, but the whole system is very broken up. And then you throw these ad hoc ideas where even people who are in the business haven't a clue what the wording means. That is when you look at
You hit the nail on the head. It's a PR exercise. 12,000 houses, 12,500 houses, I think they announced that was built in this year. Absolutely. It's just the biggest load of nonsense I've seen in a long time, and I'm fed up looking at it. They've made planning that complicated. Material prices have gone through the roof. You've got labour issue around labour costs now. It is an absolute disaster. Let's call it as it is.
I would agree. But also bear in mind the risk that we were talking about, risk that people take. So if you imagine what builders are doing, it's relatively similar to cars, because when I was in the car business, people assumed you had a field like potatoes and you pull out a car, you polish it off, add a zero, and you just sit and wait for your 1,000% profit. When people look at developers now, years ago, let's say my late father would have, you build a relationship with someone who has a plot of land, you show them you're not a shyster, you convey what you're hoping to build and the value you want to drive for the local community. That could take you 3 years to build trust with someone who then imparts their land at a fair price, and then you then build. Now you're competing with international funds. That it's like the internet. That is what it is. But why should you pay 30%, 40% above a land value, and then as soon as you buy it, you spend 2 years in court fighting it out with the local who doesn't like the idea of progress? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And when I think that the disconnect is, people assume that everyone is Glenveagh and everyone is Cairn who have money to beat the band and can wait 10 years for a land bank to come to fruition. The market isn't made up of them. The market is made up of hundreds of independent builders who want to build and drive value. And now they're opting out.
And building in their local areas and developing. And as you said, taking the risk and everything else that goes with it. So, look, we could go on and on and on about the Irish property market. But I think from today's podcast, we've been chatting nearly 50 minutes. We're hoping to do half an hour, but it's gone on. But it's been a fantastic conversation, Lisa, so far with Andrew. And real insightful to his approach and how he goes about his day-to-day work from finding property for a very niche market.
Yeah, brilliant, Andrew. And Andrew, do you have a podcast yourself? How can people connect with you? Is it through LinkedIn? How should they connect with you?
So LinkedIn is a big one, and my details are on it, but I'm big into connecting. So if anyone who's listening to this wants to have a coffee, even over Zoom, I'm always grateful to meet good people. We have a newsletter, but the access to that is through LinkedIn, and my details for my WhatsApp, and I'm always on WhatsApp. So that for me would be your mainstay. And that's kind of where we tend to live. And the podcast, the newsletter is done in podcast form as well, called Shut the Front Door. But that's a newsletter that we put out every 2 weeks as well, that drives a bit of value for people as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So brilliant conversation there, Lisa, with Andrew Rattigan. A bit of a Galway name there, Andrew, but as I say, you've no cousins in Galway, have you, around that direction? Yeah,
the JJ Rattigan used to be we used to call them the Galway Rattigans. They're my father's cousins, yeah. There is lineage going back there, yeah. It's the silent H that gets people, you know, the R-H-A-T throws people off.
Definitely does. Lisa, it's been a busy summer. It's been one of those that we are heading into the autumn now as we look forward. So this podcast coming out very shortly in August, but all things heading towards the end of the year with a couple of months left, looking promising for you.
Yeah, and also just to tell our listeners as well, myself and Porrick, we are going to step this up, this podcast up. We've made a decision. So we are going to, again, rather than being maybe once every month putting out a podcast, we're going to do a bit more often, aren't we, Porrick? And we're going to get some great guests on. And so we'd like anyone that wants to, you know, hear someone speak, reach out to us and we'll try and get them on the podcast. That'd be great.
Absolutely. We love, as Andrew has indicated as well, we love sharing, we love bringing on people to give them ideas, to help them along the journey, because as we say, we're all connected. And if you have a situation that needs sorted, no better place to come, Lisa. You'll not be long sorting it for them, will you?
I don't know about that now. I suppose just quickly there, I'm looking, if anybody out there that has property to rent, Newbridge, Naas, kind of Dublin, around that side of close to Newbridge and Naas, I'm looking to speak to anybody. And also, we're also in the market at the moment for buying property. So again, we're looking around that sort of area as well. So we're looking for the larger properties, minimum three beds. So if anybody's kind of thinking about selling or renting, please reach out to me.
Just you pitch away there, Lisa. Thanks very much.
So that is podcast,
another, why not? It's another edition of the Soil Foundations Property Podcast. A big thank you to Andrew Radigan. If you want to reach out to myself or Lisa, of course, I have investments in Northern Ireland, always looking for investors who are interested in getting a better return on their money. We have a lot of projects on the go at the minute. So do check us out on the socials. We'll talk to you next month. So do take care.